Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 62 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action comedy adventure thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is the father-daughter tag team duo of Joe and Cassie Tura. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Hi, Rob.
Good to be back. And, yes. You know, today's election day in New York. So before, we'll do this, I'm going to run out and vote after this. But then we have a big mayoral election. And not to get too political, but I'm writing in Lee Wallace for New York mayor. So.
Well, I don't know if this year he's running for New York mayor or he's running for the Gotham mayor. So it could be either.
You know what? Either way, it's probably a much better choice than anyone else.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Brewster's Millions. None of the above. There you go. For everything. it makes sense. Well, good luck with that with the voting.
Thank you.
let's hope Lee Wallace gets enough votes. That's all we can say.
I agree. Let's go.
Exactly. All right. So minute 62 begins with the motorcycles taking off and ends with Blue's threat getting cut off. So we ended things yesterday with the handoff. You know, they decided to pass off the loot from the police car, from the overturned police car with the two guys still stuck inside, to Ponch and John, who are going to, take it uptown to make sure that it makes it there on time, even though they're not on time.
Time.
Yeah. Time.
Yeah. We're out of time.
So, what do you mean?
That's right. What do you say? Shut up.
That's hard to spell. Shadduup.
Shut up. That's right. Shut up. Yeah, it's not hard to spell. That's the way it is. You know?
Well, for us New Yorkers, it's easy.
Exactly. I'm a token New Yorker. I was born in New Jersey, so not that far away.
You know? Close enough.
Exactly. Yeah. before we even move on, there's the first thing that you see when watching this minute is as as Ponch and John are driving off. Or writing off. You see in the back an ad for it says come up to cool. So yep. It's back in the days when you had cigarette advertising all around, but
everywhere,
completely everywhere. So what do either of you know about cool cigarettes?
I know that my parents tried to smoke cool cigarettes at one point and did not like it. So they went back to their Carltons, which was disgusting enough. So yeah.
Okay.
But I know it was all based on the whole menthol flavor cool. So, and the ads were everywhere in the 70s, everywhere.
Right. You have any guess as to what year they launched their first cigarettes, the unfiltered menthol cigarette?
I'm going to say like 1952.
33.
Oh, 33? Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was produced by Brown and Williamson. Mm-hmm. One of the seven dwarves, as they're called in the movie The Insider. So they in 1933 they launched an unfiltered regular size menthol cigarette. And they became the first menthol brand which had nationwide distribution. They tried using a lot of advertisement saying that it gives you throat comfort, which basically helped keep it popular for decades. And cool became synonymous with the idea of menthol cigarettes. Once they started introducing filtered versions, people didn't like it as much. and competitors like Salem and Newport, those became much more popular afterwards. Do you know what the mascot was of Cool Cigarettes? You know, like Camel, we know it's a camel. So, like, what do you remember what the mascot was for Penguin?
Oh, ooh, man. You just said it. You did.
Crap. All right.
Oh,
is it a penguin?
Okay.
Very good, Cassie.
That's what editing is for.
Thank you.
That's what editing. You know what? I'll give it to you. I won't edit it down. I'll keep that in there. That's fine.
I do love penguins. They're very cute animals.
Yeah. So due to my faux pas, yes, it is penguin. A penguin is the symbol of the Cool brand.
I forgot about that because I remember all those ads and I just completely blacked that out of my head that it was a penguin. Yeah. I was thinking, is it a polar bear? No, couldn't be.
Right. Yeah. Well, it makes sense. You know, if you're talking about Cool, even though it's spelled with a K, as opposed to, the Cool with the C, but the idea is that you're in a cooler area, I guess, or whatever it is. So yes, they had a penguin as their mascot. Oh, well, the truth is it was actually referred to at the beginning as Penguin, and then they changed it to Cool.
That was probably smart.
Yes. But they, you know, they kept the penguin as their mascot. So I guess it makes sense. That's what we have for Cool Cigarettes. Hmm. Okay. So we get to see the shot just for again a couple seconds. And I don't know if either of you noticed, but there's a guy standing on the right hand side of the screen as the cops are making their U-turn, and he's like, he's not saluting, but his hand is in a salute fashion in order to cover his eyes, I guess, from the sun, and it's just really funny that he's just like looking there. It's, apparently,
oh, I missed that.
Yeah, actually, there's a number of them that are doing that. So I don't know if this was like on purpose. They were saying, okay, you know, we want you just to pretend that you're looking at what's going on, or these were just, you know, they were just filming and the sun was blocking these pedestrians' eyes. I don't know.
I feel like that's realistic, though. I mean, people are constantly doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in New York when you turn one corner and the sun just blares at you from between buildings. So, yeah.
Correct. And then the shot goes back to Garber and we see him... you know, he looks like he's completely ragged at this point. You know,
yes.
You know, his tie is opened a little bit more probably than before. He looks like he's been sweating. And the thing that I keep pointing out in this movie is we see the blurred clock in the background, and you can still see that it says 3:15, which is amazing. The continuity here with the clock so far up until now in 62 minutes of this movie has been perfect. You know, so hopefully that will continue for the next, what do we have? We have another 45 episodes. So let's hope they keep that consistency up there.
You know, I like yes, it. good work from the set people there.
Completely. I feel like you don't see that type of like consistency in movies anymore. I feel like they pay like less attention to that type of stuff.
They just make sure there are no clocks.
Yeah, like a doctor's office, yes.
That's right. It's or a casino. You know, there are no clocks or windows in casinos. Yeah. You know? So, yeah. And I do like the fact that there is a guy standing near the clock who has a shirt that is almost the same color as Garber's tie. And it matches the yellow pad paper that he's holding. You know, which I think is very funny. And then we hear over the speaker, we hear Blue say, "Are you still there, Garber?" And Garber then answers and goes, "Still here." And he goes, "Tell me something, Pelham. If we were a couple seconds late, you mean you really would have knocked off an innocent party?" And then Blue responds and goes, "Affirmative."
Hmm.
He goes, "Now I'm going to give you the instructions for the delivery of the money. As usual, you'll follow them to the letter. Okay. Now, first of all, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, about the fact of whether he really would have, followed through and stuff like that. We know that Blue is a cold bastard. There's no question about that. He's not, he's able to keep himself in check. He's not like Mr. Gray, who just will go on forever without he'll go off on a tangent without a problem. But Blue, he has this whole thing planned out very well, but he is very cold, and I wouldn't see for a second him having any problem killing one of the passengers. And
Oh
we won't
yeah,
even go into
absolutely.
spoilers. We won't start continuing with spoilers here, but he really doesn't, when he says affirmative, you can really believe him. Even though he immediately changes the subject. He basically acknowledges the fact that this is what Garber asked, and then moves right on and says, okay, back to business. I'm gonna give you instructions, and you're gonna do exactly what I want. And then
Sticking to the plan.
that's right. And then Garber goes, I got it. Go ahead. Which again, I have sometimes I feel that Garber is a little too complacent. He is obviously sometimes saying things that he shouldn't say, but it's sort of like half jokingly. But
Yeah, no, I get that. I feel he does it because he kind of wants, almost like he's trying to
he wants
goad Blue
more
into,
time.
he does. I feel like he's almost trying to goad him into saying something, like in a way, you know what I mean? It's like trying to like to give away something, which he almost kind of does in a couple seconds.
He sort of does. And so then he starts talking, and Blue goes, two unarmed policemen will walk. And then we hear this huge, loud sneeze from Green.
It
And
was a juicy one,
that
yes.
really was. And I love the look on Blue's face as this happened.
It's
Yeah.
fantastic,
It's
yes.
completely, this is like he's basically saying to himself, this is the last thing I need, and I can't believe that this guy is causing all of these problems. Now, and in some ways he like closes his eyes as if maybe to make sure that he doesn't get sneezed on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I
This
think
is back
it's
before COVID,
definitely
so no
part,
one was
yeah.
really no one really thought about that stuff as much, about the
I mean,
germs.
I feel like that look of annoyance would be almost anybody. When somebody gives a big, wet, juicy sneeze that close to
Yes.
you, that close proximity, you're gonna be like, oh,
Yes,
really?
but at least he had a
Yeah.
handkerchief,
That's true.
that he's completely filling up with all of his sneezing and germs. Exactly.
Yuck.
I never get the idea of handkerchiefs, but whatever.
Please, no, me neither.
It doesn't fit our generation. It's previous
No,
generation.
not at all, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he's like a little annoyed, and then we get Garber saying Gesundheit. And Blue, and I love that this is foreshadowing, because you don't when you first see this movie, you have no idea that that's what's going to be the
Yeah.
clincher at the end. Like Cassie, when you saw this, you probably had no clue that that was going to come up later.
No, not really. But when I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but like when the end happens, it's like it makes so much sense why
Oh, for
he was
sure.
like the last one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like as time was going on, I was like, well, that's interesting. Like, and I was thinking, like, are they going to catch him? Like, and then when that happened, I was like, you know what? That makes total sense. Like, you're right. The foreshadowing was like amazing there. Yeah. Like, it made
And
everything make so much more sense.
yeah, for sure. Again, it's also a great way to finally catch someone. But we'll get there. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll let the guests that week discuss that part. And then Blue just doesn't even skip a beat and continues with his explanation of things and goes, and you know, normally you would have a character say, as I was saying, and he doesn't. He just goes right back into the, you know, he has this mantra of what he's saying. He goes, two unarmed policemen will walk down the track, one with the money and the other with a torch, which he will use to flash continuously from side to side. When they reach the car, the rear door will be opened, and the one with the money will throw it onto the floor of the train. Then they will both turn, and they will walk back to the 28th Street station. Acknowledge. Again, this is planned so meticulously. He really knows exactly what he wants. The one thing that I find interesting is that you'd think that Blue would have been smart enough to not use the word torch, even though he's
British. Exactly. Pretty.
You know, you just say a flashlight, you say a light, say something, because they don't even acknowledge the fact after this. And, you know, even later today or tomorrow, they're not even going to say anything about the fact that oh, he meant a flashlight. You know, they just automatically assume that everyone knows that he's referring to a flashlight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can tell by his accent that he's British or something, but I mean, that totally, almost totally gives it away, more info on himself, so.
Yeah,
it's almost like one of his few slip ups, maybe.
I'm not even talking about that as a slip up. I'm just saying that if I was explaining something to somebody, I'm going to explain it to them in terms that I know for sure they're going to understand what I'm talking about, and I wouldn't use a colloquialism that there's even a slight possibility that they're not going to understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
You know, even going to like the whole New York versus Midwest idea of soda, okay?
Yeah.
And soda and soda pop and you know, I love that in Texas everything's known as Coke. You want a Sprite, but it's known as a Coke. You know, that type of thing. But if you're talking to somebody, you're going to use and if you know the colloquialism of what they're talking about, you know, you're not going to say to someone in the Midwest, you know, I want a soda, because then you're going to get a bottle of seltzer. You know, that you're going to say, I want a bottle of pop, you know, something like that, or use a specific brand. So you'd think that someone like Blue, who is very sophisticated and obviously is very planned out in everything that he's doing here, he would have thought about it beforehand and said, okay, you know, I'm going to use the phrase as I should be using it and not use the word torch.
Yeah, this way they definitely understand. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense.
Exactly, because, I mean, again, if you were to say to someone, bring a torch, so, you know, that goes back to Indiana Jones. You know, okay, let's light up a torch and we're gonna walk down the subway waving a literal torch back and forth. So, yeah, it's...
Well, Garber should have said, there's no time to find a torch.
That's true. That's true.
Maybe in the new remake with Mark Wahlberg and you know, I'm sorry.
Let's hope not.
Oh gosh, no.
Yeah, and at this point, Garber, he's just fed up with the whole thing and goes, "I got it." And he goes, "Is that all?" And Blue goes, "Yeah, that's all for now. But you keep in mind, won't you, that the same ground rules apply. Any wrong moves by anyone," and he gets cut off. So we're gonna have to wait until tomorrow to find out what his true threat is here. You know, what he's going to be saying. Who knows? So yeah, it's very interesting. I like the way that this minute is framed. You know, we basically just have this back and forth between Garber and Blue. That is accentuated in the middle by a sneeze.
That's
yes.
Maybe we start calling Mr. Green Sneezy, and that'll be it. You know, wouldn't that be a little easier?
It's funny though, because the whole office, though, is if you want to call it office, they're all hanging on every word. Like you can see everybody like focused, even though they're blurry in the background. They're focused on every word going on between the two of them, which is great.
Yeah. And again, I also love the cinematography where we are completely focused on Garber, but as you said, we can still see that everyone else is not doing anything but listening to what's going on here.
Yes, great. We do get the one shot of Carell when he gives that little disapproving head shake, which I love.
Yeah.
So, well, then again, I feel like he's disapproving of every single thing in this movie. So.
Yeah. Well, because come on, they shot Fat Cat. So what do you expect?
I know. I love Dick O'Neill. He's fantastic in this movie. He's so great. Yeah,
he really is. I love him. And again, we get the two bureaucrats behind him. Now they're
yeah. The one guy shakes his head a little bit, and the other guy's just kind of like, oh.
And he's got his hands behind his back, you know, that type of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So do either of you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
I'm good with this one. I'm good with this minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will once again give their top five of a particular actor in this movie, and this time we will be discussing Robert Shaw. So we're going to once again do it snake fashion. So since you started last time, Joe, so Cassie, you get to start this time with your number five.
Awesome. So this is kind of the same situation where actually for two of them I've seen the whole thing, and then the last five are, I mean the last, like the bottom are stuff I've seen like clips of, like a lot of it, like you know what I mean? So the first one is The Deep. I remember, I think like a lot of it came up, like I was on YouTube or something, and like I was just like watching like movie stuff, and yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff from The Deep, so, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and I'd be down to watch the whole thing, because it seems like, and I didn't realize that was, I think that one is based off of the same guy who wrote Jaws.
That is
so
correct.
I feel like it'd be cool to watch the whole thing, actually.
Oh, yeah, you're going to watch it, don't worry.
All right, cool. So that's my number five.
You've gotten your homework.
Yes. All right, so my, if I could say honorable mentions, Black Sunday, Robin and Marion, and Force 10 from Navarone are all like, maybe not the best movies, but he's really good in them. Like, there's a lot to like about all three, but my number five is also The Deep. But mostly the reason why I like this movie is not just Robert Shaw. Louis Gossett Jr. is great in it. My dad was a huge fan of The Deep. I think partly because he's like, well, Peter Benchley wrote it. We got to see it. And I know he loved it, but I think like all most red-blooded American males in the 70s, he loved it because of Jacqueline Bisset. But we won't. That's for a different podcast, probably. But yeah, my number five is The Deep, and my number four would be From Russia with Love, which he's easily one of the best Bond villains. He's one of the coolest Bond villains, I think, which is why he's so good. He's of course he's pretty evil and slimy at times, but he's just cool. I mean, back in the Connery Bond villains were the coolest ones. But yeah. I would put him definitely top five all time Bond villains. So
okay. Yeah. I can see that. I mean, one of the things that it's funny that you say he's like a cool villain. He's basically the second henchman of a Bond villain in the series. So he didn't really have anyone to try to outdo at that point.
This is true. Yeah, that's a good point. And also, From Russia with Love was a dad favorite. He used to actually he had the soundtrack album, which I think I still have somewhere. But yeah, he would just throw that on every once in a while, just for no reason. Which is cool.
Very
cool. Come home from school and my dad's listening to From Russia with Love. It's like, oh, okay.
Very cool. All right, Cassie, your number four.
So my number four is something I really want to watch the whole way through, which is The Sting. Like, I've seen a lot of like clips of it. I've seen like I really want to watch it the whole way through. But you know,
you will.
Yeah. Dad's probably compiling a list right now.
Yeah, it gets longer and longer every second.
But yeah, so definitely The Sting, just because it's like it's such like a classic, and I feel like it's like, yeah, just I really am very interested in it. That's the type of movie I feel like I would love.
Very cool. All right. So now you're number three.
Yeah. So when I was looking at his IMDb page, I feel like this pick is gonna be like really funny. So I took a history of animation class, and when we were learning about stop motion stuff, we learned about the Golden Voyage of Sinbad, for which he has an uncredited role as the Oracle of All Knowledge or something. And I watched basically a big majority of this when learning about like stop motion animation and stuff. And I found it really interesting, and I thought it was super cool that like he was in that. So that's my number three.
Oh wow! What did you say? The Seven Voyages of Sinbad?
The Golden Voyage of
Golden
Sinbad,
Voyage.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was on his IMDb page, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I Googled it to make sure. I was like, I watched this for my history of animation class, and like he's uncredited, but still, I was like, wow.
That's very
Like a
cool.
Robert Shaw thing that I've seen, like really, like a big majority of, like that's so cool.
The fun
Feel
film.
like
I used to have the Marvel Comics adaptation.
oh well. All right, Joe, what's your number three?
My number three is The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. Yes, I know it's low on the list.
But there's a reason for it, so that's fine.
Yeah, no, there is a reason for it. I mean, he's just perfect in this movie, so he's just so great. And my number two is The Sting. I rank The Sting over The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 for Robert Shaw's performance, just because I just absolutely love him in The Sting. The way he's so angry all the time through the whole movie. I mean, there's not one second where he's not angry. And the byplay between him and Paul Newman on the train scene is just phenomenal. I just absolutely love him in The Sting. And every time I watch it, I go around for weeks going, "You follow? You follow?" So, that's why I put The Sting over this one.
We're out of time. All right, Cassie, you're number two.
My number two is The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. I like I said, I love this movie, but I also really like his character. Like I feel like he was such a good person to like plan out this like this whole hijacking situation, because he's so like calm, cool, collected. Like he has a plan. He's doing his best to stick to it. And like I just think that his character is like really, really interesting. So yeah, it's my number two.
Very cool. Okay, and you're number one, Cassie.
Jaws. Of course it's Jaws.
Wait, that's when you flew?
I really Yes, I
Ooh,
love
there you go.
Jaws. I mean, Jaws did make me afraid of the ocean though.
Isn't that the point?
I
Yes.
guess so. Yeah, right? No, I love Jaws. I love Steven Spielberg movies. I think he's a great director, and I just and seeing like the Jaws like play, The Shark Is Broken, like that was really
Oh, you've
cool and
seen that? Oh,
everything.
wow! I've heard it's
Yeah, I
amazing.
saw that with Dad. Yeah, it was
Yeah,
so cool.
it was phenomenal. Yeah.
So yeah, I just think Jaws is such like a good movie, so that had to be number one.
Oh wow! Very cool. And Joe, you're number one, even though I doubt it's any a surprise to anybody at this point.
Yeah, it's absolutely Jaws. It's in my opinion the second best movie ever made, and every time I watch it, I feel like maybe it's more like 1B. It's like one percentage point behind The Great Escape. But Jaws is, to me, it's a perfect film. There are maybe a handful of films I find are perfect, and I think that two of them are Spielberg movies. It's Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark. But yeah, Jaws, just everything about it is fantastic. So I could talk for 10 months about how great Jaws is. So, but I won't. But yeah, so that's it for me.
Very cool. All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around the wheel goes. And it's slowing down, it's slowing down. The original movie came out in 1955, and the remake came out
Oh
in
boy.
1996. and it's about a wife and a mistress that put a plan together in order to murder the man that they both love.
Huh.
Interesting. 96.
Is Michael Douglas in the remake?
No, he is not.
Okay, so that's not that movie. Wow. Holy macaroni.
You can say holy mackerel. We've learned what that means.
Yeah, I should have. Sorry. Well, I wanted to give everybody something
different.
Now I
gotta look up what holy macaroni means.
Wow.
Okay, I'll give you a hint that this is not a typical remake. It's because the original is in a different language, and then the 1996 version is the English language version of it. You know, 41 years later.
Ooh. Oh,
interesting.
Wait a minute. Eyes Without a Face?
No.
No. Okay. Is the original French?
Yes.
Okay. Ooh, 96. Oh, wife and a mistress. Oh my gosh. It's not a comedy, right?
Depends how you want to look at it.
Wow. Ooh, why am I drawing such a blank? Because it's the 90s. I don't like the 90s. Wow.
What do you mean you don't like the 90s? I knew you're a big fan of Daybreak, of Daylight. Come on.
Yeah, I know. wow.
This is All hard. Right,
I might need.
This sounds like familiar,
okay,
though.
Okay, so the remake it the does. Remake stars Sharon Stone and Isabella Johnny as the two women, and the man they're trying to kill is Chaz Palminteri.
Okay, I've seen this. I just cannot remember the name, but I have seen it.
Okay,
and I didn't like
okay.
it.
Okay, I definitely didn't like the remake, but the original is amazing. And the original, I can tell you the name of the French actors that are in it: Simone Signoret, Vera Cloutot,
yes.
and Paul Morisi. I guess you can call him.
Oh my God. I should know this. I'm drawing such a blank. I'm not going to get it. I'm so disappointed in myself.
Okay, it's Diabolique.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the original again at Film Forum. I think we saw that original way back in the days when I used to go to the movies every week. So yeah. Ah.
All right. That's okay.
Epic fail.
No, it's all right. It's all right.
I must be thinking about going to vote soon,
maybe,
so that's
maybe.
Why.
All right. Would you both like to now once again tell people where they can find you?
All right. Yeah, you can find me on my blog, Von Luger's Butter, which is torahfish.wordpress.com. And if you want to see stuff that both of us, Cassie and I, have written, you can go to Marvel University. .blogspot.com. Back in the day, these crazy people decided to review every single Marvel comic that came out. When they hit the 70s, they needed more help, so they recruited me, and they said they would give me Spider-Man to do. I'm like, I am in. I'll do whatever you want. And they handed me some of the worst titles ever, like Nova and Werewolf by Night, which were awful, but it was so much fun. It was just one of the funnest things I've ever written in my life. And when we got to around 1978, 79, they had some Ant-Man comics where the lead character's daughter's name is Cassandra. So I got Cassie to review those books, which was a great experience for her and for myself. So you can check us out there too.
Wow.
Marvel University. Fantastic. It was so much fun.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow,
Gesundheit!